1080 Poison Pure, the powder or whatever it is extremely toxic. They were eerily dropping. There were tourists everywhere, and there were people camping, and the choppers were working right behind them and dropping right through the tracks across the waterways, and these people really had no idea what was going on.
Hi, this is Bruce Lipton, and you're listening to Green Planet FM.
Kia ora, greetings, and welcome to Green Planet FM 104.6. I'm Tim Lynch, and I trust that you are doing well. I invite you to stay with me over the next hour as we discuss and find ways to take care of our unique and magnificent green planet Earth.
Kia ora and welcome. I'm Lisa Eyre, and this is Green Planet FM. Today I'm going to be talking to Clyde Graff. And we're talking about the contentious issue of 1080 poison that's being dropped all over our New Zealand forests in order to kill possums and other pets. Pests. Not pets, but it does kill pets. Pests. Welcome, Clyde.
Thanks very much.
Now, how did you become so passionate about this issue?
Well, back in 2006, my brother and I were asked to undertake a documentary on the use of 1080 poison in New Zealand. And we were very naive. We didn't really know much about 1080 at that time. But we were outdoors guys, enjoyed the outdoors, and made a lot of outdoors videos and stuff up to that point. So we then flew into the Uruwera National Park, where a small corner of it was being poisoned along with the Whirinaki Forest Park, about 55,000 hectares. And we filmed what was going on in there. And we found about, I think, 10 poisoned deer at that time. They were using carrot baits and cereal baits, and what we discovered was they were all being dropped through the waterways as well. And the effects on the animals was quite obvious and abhorrent. So in any case, we put the documentary together, and it was called A Shadow of Doubt, and it played twice on Maori television, and that was that. Then in about 2000, and we were filming in the Kaharangi National Park, and we were filming weka, and we came across a weka consuming a possum carcass. Now, we weren't really aware of omnivorous species like that consuming poisoned carcasses, you know, lying around the forest, and it was quite a shock. So then we decided that we'd better do something a bit more hard-hitting, and we did a documentary called Poisoning Paradise. And that documentary, we travelled the country, took about 18 months to film and produce. We talked to scientists, doctors, farmers, all sorts of people. And it was quite a disturbing documentary in the end, and had quite a bit of impact. And as a result, the PCE came out and put out her report on 1080 poison use in New Zealand. And so that's how we got into it. And the more we get into it, the more disturbed we are about the way it's used and about the misinformation that goes along with it.
Yes, well, that's certainly how I found out about it, was watching your video, Poisoning Paradise, which I have a copy of, but it's actually now online, isn't it?
Yes, it is. There's several ways to find it, but just by Googling Poisoning Paradise, the Graff Boys, it's easy enough to find.
Right, the Graff Boys is what you and your brother Steve call yourselves?
That's right.
Yep. Okay, so sodium fluoroacetate, known in pesticide form as 1080, is the organofluorine chemical compound with the formula FCH2CO2NA, and it's a colourless salt and has a taste similar to that of sodium chloride and is used as a metabolic poison. So how do the animals eat that?
Well, it is mixed into cereal food. I don't believe the Department of Conservation or anyone else is using carrots anymore. I think the bykill was too much on the birds, and I think that in Poisoning Paradise we identified that the carrot baits can float down the rivers and then end up well out of the poison drop zones, so they become a hazard. outside. But these, the 1080 poison pure, the powder or whatever it is extremely toxic. The amount that's put on per hectare will kill around 18 people. That's 2 kilograms of bait per hectare. So it's, even though it's mixed at 0.15% pure with cereal bait, it's still extremely toxic, and two baits will kill a deer, an average-sized deer, 2 12-gram baits. So it's mixed into cereal food and aerially dropped across the forests. And when it's undertaken, the drops, it's dropped directly into the waterways at the same rate as into the land. So it's as if the waterways aren't there. And people say, well, you're a liar. That's not true. And we say, and we've always said, it is true. And now, of course, we have access to the toxin flight charts. They are the official chart that shows exactly where the baits are dropped. And in just about every case, it's right across the waterways, including, incidentally, into the Hunua dams. Well, not the dams themselves, but all the water that ran into the dams during the aerial drop that you had last year or the year before. The baits went right across the waterways and into the dams. Now, that information will be on a new website that we're currently working on.
And that's www.watersourcenz.org?
Yes, watersourcenz.org. And it's a different perspective on the use of 1080 poison in New Zealand. And it raises some very important issues, touches on a whole range of things, including health, 1080 poison, E. coli, councils, the way councils work with 1080, animal welfare, kiwi, trout, deer, flight charts, all that stuff will be there available for people to see and view and consume.
Well, if the stuff is getting into our waterways, eventually it's going to make a difference to people. We should be basically concerned for our health.
The departments, the agencies that use the poison, they argue, they get research undertaken, they fund it, and they argue that 1080 is biodegradable, it breaks down, it's diluted, etc., etc. However, the Ministry of Health has declared that there have been no epidemiology studies in regard to 1080 in human health, and so there is a slim chance that it could be a persistent poison at very low rates, and it's unproven whether it is or it isn't, and that's part of the issue here. They're dropping perhaps around 4 tons of pure 1080 poison, if you like, every year in New Zealand. That's enough to kill over 15 million people. Now, that's going year on year on year. And, you know, when you're doing that much poison across the nation, you really, really should be looking further into the long-term or the low-dose impacts. But it seems to be ignored in this country.
Well, I mean, I remember one of my sons, as we were walking, we had a sheep paddock at the back of our place, and he bent down and he picked up some sheep poo and put it straight in his mouth and said, raisins. And so, I mean, if you were walking in a forest and some of the cereal baits were still there and active, it wouldn't take a child very long to actually be poisoned.
Now, the cereal baits, when they're cast across the forest, they're cast across all the walking tracks as well. In the earlier days, they even would fly the baits right across the huts and right across the water tanks. And then they'd fly in the next day and clear them out. We were filming when that happened, and we were actually in the hut when the chopper went over and hit the baits were just dropping all across the hut. But these days, they do buffer a little bit around the hut, but not the walking tracks and not the waterways. So those baits can be quite, you know, long-lived in drier times. Generally, they'll be there for a month. Department of Conservation do go through and clear tracks, walking tracks, straight after, or within 24 hours or 48 hours, whatever it is, and they clear the baits that they can find and push them to the side. However, in a recent aerial drop down at the Mount Aspiring National Park, which was in February this year, they were aerially dropping, and we've got the footage on. It'll be on this website as well, but it's online at the moment. There were tourists everywhere, and there were people camping, and the choppers were working right behind them and dropping right through the tracks across the waterways, and these people really had no idea what was going on. And some of the commentary by these people was quite interesting. They thought it was a bushfire or, you know, some other operation, not actually poison. And so the baits are, you know, they're out there, and it is possible for someone to eat a bait, but or a child, but it doesn't appear to happen. Once a possum or a rat or a deer consumes the bait and dies, it then becomes a toxic bait in itself, so it becomes more persistent than if the serial bait dissolved into the ground, because the carcass takes many months to break down and it's very toxic.
And so you'd have all sorts of birds of prey and insects consuming?
Omnivorous birds, mm-hmm. Yes, omnivorous, carnivorous birds of prey. I think there's about, I could name five anyway, species of birds directly affected by consuming animal carcasses, including kea, weka, more, you know, moorhawks and hawks. Falcons can be impacted as well, but they're more live prey. And of course, insects as well. I mean, insects consume the baits and they also consume the carcasses. And 1080 poison is also an insecticide, so it can kill insects, but it can also kill insectivorous birds feeding on insects that have eaten the poison baits or carcasses. So these are the ongoing risks that we find are fairly irresponsible, very irresponsible, for a agency, government agency, to be undertaking to control possums and rats. And when we know that after an aerial poisoning operation, the research shows over and over again that rats are the first to repopulate an area, and they will actually exceed populations they were at prior to any aerial operation. So the aerial operations make the rat populations worse, and then it starts a cycle, and the Department of Conservation says, well, we've got to repoison. So every 2 or 3 years they're aerially poisoning again to kill rat plagues, or what they call a rat plagues. So it's just something that's non-sustainable, and it's going on forever and ever. And here we are talking about the new predator-free concept of poisoning in up to 2050. Now, predator-free, on their website, doesn't mention 1080 poison or poisoning. They mention trapping. But their intent is very clear. And you'll find it on the government-owned poison factory website, which is Aurelion now. It was Animal Control Products. It's now called Aurelion. And if you look up Aurelion, they clearly state their plan is to produce more poison and to rid pests by 2050.
How do you spell Aurelion?
Aurelion is O-R-I-L-L-I-O-N.
Okay, just for anybody who wants to Google it. Yes, is this the Maggie Barry sort of initiative, the predator-free?
Yes, the government, it's Sir Paul Keller, one of the scientists. He's passed away now, but he came up with the concept of predator-free. And then, of course, in my opinion, in this country, anything to do with pest control or possum, anti-possum, anything like that, is jumped on by a lot of people because it's big business. And so the predator-free concept sort of kicked off, and now the government's running with it, and it's even made its way into council, local council long-term plans, etc. So it's really infiltrated very quickly, and they have got no idea how they're going to fund this so-called program. They don't know how it's going to be achieved. In my opinion, it's a big fraud. The people of New Zealand are being frauded with this. It's not possible to do, and it's dangerous to even try. We'll end up, you know, wiping out more species than we're saving.
Well, I think, I live in Titirangi in the bush, and yes, from time to time we have possums around the place, and if I put bait out, that would, you know, possibly kill my dog. So, I mean, there'll be people like me who'll say, well, sorry, but we're not going to do that, and a lot of people might not want to put a trap in there either. So, I mean, it doesn't seem logical to me. It doesn't seem to be how nature would work. It seems that what we're trying to do is to work against nature.
Yes, look, if I, from our observation of filming around the country for many years, visiting different forests, we find the forests that are most healthy, the ones that seem to be doing the best and feel the best and look the best, are the forests that have never been aerially poisoned. Example, the Waikaremoana road through the Uruwera National Park. There, only a few months ago, we spent a night on the side of the road like we always do and used our techniques, shall I say, to try to see how many kiwi were in the area where we were camped on the side of the road. And we heard five different kiwi from all around the area, wild kiwi, all around that area, which is a great example of how wild kiwi are doing well in the when the forest, when they're left alone and unpoisoned. Another example is the Okahu Valley, which is the Whirinaki Forest Park, which is right adjacent to the Uruwera National Park. There's a valley up there that we've known, you know, been up since we were kids. The old man used to hunt up there many, many years ago. And what we found was the Department of Conservation had been taking eggs, kiwi eggs, out of that valley. Now, it turns out they've taken, I believe it's about 90 eggs and a few chicks out of that valley and never put a single one back. Now, that valley has never been aerially poisoned. And it's never been stoat-trapped. It's had nothing. In fact, back in the 60s, it was logged as well. So the wild kiwi survived the logging. They survived the high, so-called high predator numbers. And they're still there to this day. And the Department of Conservation has been using that area as a source of kiwi eggs. And this is all proven through the OIA, so we've got the documentation. And those kiwi are then moved to other places, including to poison forests or advocacy areas, to make it look like the other forests are doing well. And then when you go to the Tongariro Kiwi Sanctuary, where it's heavily poisoned over and over, and a lot of kiwi are dying in there, and you ask how many kiwi chicks are going out of there to go to other places, and the answer is none. Any kiwi chick that comes out of the Tongariro through Operation Nest Egg simply goes back into that kiwi sanctuary to try to keep it alive. But in most cases, within 5 years, the kiwi chicks are dead. And so you see, we hear the stories about how great 1080 is for kiwi and how it's saving this and that. But the actual truth is, and we can prove it, is that in the forests that aren't poisoned, we've still got the wild kiwi if they were there, you know, if they existed there 30 years ago, they're still there now. Stewart Island is another example. The kiwi there appear to be thriving. They seem to be spreading over our periods of filming down there. We've seen them even become more prevalent. So the only thing about Stewart Island, there's no stoats, no mustelids down there, but there's possums and rats. But they all live, you know, they co-inhabit the area, the forest, quite well. And then back to the health of the forest, the Uruwera National Park, all through there, it's so healthy, the bush is so healthy, the rata bloom is magnificent, and yet there's never been an aerial poison drop through there. And there's possums, and there's the odd deer, and there's the odd rat, and the odd pig, and yet it's a healthy forest. If we look at the Puriora Forest Park, which is on the western side of Lake Taupo, 30 years ago, there were kiwi in there. And that's a great podocarp forest. Beautiful, beautiful forest. It's been eerily poisoned 5 times now. Kiwi are now extinct. There's not one left. Now, the Department of Conservation will argue, oh, the pests got them, the predators got them. Well, really? You bombed it 5 times. Didn't your poison, you know, do the job? But no, the kiwi are gone and it's prime kiwi habitat and yet they're gone now. And yet you look at the unmanaged areas, like in the Uruweras where I'm talking, and we've still got the wild kiwi in good numbers. So we worry about the propaganda and, you know, that's being put out there to the public to support these poison drops.
Well, now, I can totally understand that, and I stayed up at the Puriora Forest, so yes, certainly didn't hear any kiwi. And the Uruweras, why are they not poisoning that area?
Well, there's two hui Tūhoe generally, I believe, is part of the reason. They tend to be, the Tūhoe Māori people tend to be more opposed to the use of the poison, as they should be, in my opinion, and thank goodness they are. But there is rumours that that stance may start to be sliding because there appears that there's going to be an aerial poison drop sort of creeping further into some of the area there. And one part of it is the area I was just talking about where we just heard wild kiwi calling. And so that's a big concern.
Yes.
Because I think that Department of Conservation would like to poison every forest in New Zealand because I don't think they want any forest left that can expose the difference between a poisoned and an unpoisoned forest. So I think if you looked into forests now that have been repeatedly poisoned over and over and compared them to somewhere like the Waikaremoana Potocarp Forest, there'd be a clear difference with the health of the unpoisoned forest. And we're talking about not just kiwi in there. There's great numbers of robin, bush robins, and bellbirds, tuis, wood pigeons. You've got all sorts of species that are all there. They're all the species that should be there are there. You go to some of the poison forests, you still get bellbird and you still get tui, which are nectar feeders. But when you start looking at the insectivorous birds and the omnivorous, you start to see a decline in the populations in those poison forests, and it makes good sense because you're poisoning their food source every 2 to 3 years.
So you also were talking about the rasas blooming nicely somewhere. Mm-hmm. Do you think it affects the trees themselves after a few drops?
I wouldn't have a clue, but I do know that there was Mike Meads, who was an entomologist for DSIR, for about, that's the Department of Scientific Research Institute or whatever, DSIR anyway, it was a state-owned government thing for scientists many years ago. He worked with them for about, I think, 20 to 30 years, and we filmed him before he died, so we've got a couple of hours of footage of him, and he was opposed to the use of the poison because of the impact on invertebrates, which are the insects. What he also mentioned, though, was he said that the aerial drops do impact on the health of trees. And he mentioned they may not flower as well, or they may not whatever it was. Now, we don't know if that's true or not, but it is stated on the poison warning sign, on the label, that 1080 poison is phytotoxic, which is toxicity to plants. So, you know, who knows? But the practice of poisoning the forests is remote to most people. Most city folk wouldn't have a clue what goes on. They're relying on the departments to say, well, look, it's working, it's a great thing, it's harmless. Yet when we're out there filming and witnessing it, it's actually an atrocity. And I promise you, in regard to animal welfare, if the world, or even if this country, could see for one moment the animals that consume the baits, and they're encouraged to consume the baits because aerial drops go over with cereal food without poison in it, called pre-feed, which encourages animals and birds and target species to eat the baits. And then the aerial drop goes down with the poison, and so they uptake it. Now, if this country or any other country of the world could see what happened, if you could drop the trees and we'll look at the animals suffering, would all, any rational, sane human being would be disgusted.
It can take a while for them to die, can't it?
Can take hours. The dose depends. Some are poisoned fatally. Some are poisoned sub-poisoned. It's just so offensive you can't believe it. Thousands of deer are poisoned every year in the aerial drops, and that's not just us saying it, but going by our calculations, that is correct. But there's also a research paper that shows it. They did some grid searching. It's actually hundreds of thousands, possibly millions of animals poisoned every year because they're targeting rats and possums as well. Pigs and, of course, pet dogs and things are poisoned regularly. But those animals are certainly suffering. It's very offensive to see what's really going on. And as I say, if you could drop the trees and people could actually see it, you'd eat this practice would stop overnight. But because it's hidden in the forest, people don't really believe it's going on.
Well, I saw a rabbit that had been poisoned once. I wouldn't know for sure that it was 1080, but it was screaming and screaming and screaming and writhing in agony. And that, to me, was just... I felt that humans don't have the right to do that to a sentient being.
No, and that is correct. And the poison users will argue that herbivores react differently to carnivores. It's a horrific poison for dogs, for example. Dogs, when they consume the poison, they become terrified. They run into walls, or they'll run and scream and yell and carry on. For the people that have seen their dogs die of 1080 poison, well, they'll be, the staunchest backers of opposition. But in regard to us just filming out in the forest and we come across the poison deer, they're bleeding out their eyes, they're bleeding out their rear ends, the hinds are aborting if they're pregnant, and now they're dropping them and killing fawns as well during the fawn season. Blood and froth out of their faces. It's very offensive. People wonder why we get a bit pitchy and a bit annoyed and things, but we've been filming this stuff for 10 years and it kind of builds up and you do get a little bit pitchy.
I'm sure you do. I have to run into the kitchen if I show anybody the movie on the bits now.
You're talking about the rabbit screaming. Mm. Well, rabbits scream and then goats do too. Pigs certainly do. They scream and... my brother was filming in a forestry one day and he was coming across dead birds, but then he heard the screaming and he wondered what it was, so he went on over and it was just a poor old little hedgehog, but it was screaming and it was just going into convulsions. We've got the footage, and just the way it was suffering was offensive enough. And so as a nation, I worry about the health of our nation, the ability of our nation to be so cruel. We see the poison agencies pushing children into this sort of thing. Killing animals is okay. Killing pests, those terrible pests, they say. Well, to be quite frank, a possum isn't a terrible pest. A possum is a herbivore. It's not out there raiding eggs every night. That's a fact. Department of Conservation, yes, they can get their little bits of footage. They tend to hire someone, we believe, that gets things sort of set up, you might argue, in my opinion, but they get their little bits of grainy footage now and then. But possums are not out there raiding and killing birds every night. It could happen, opportunist. There was a study done, as you might be aware, that about 1,800 possums were autopsied and there was no sign of vertebrate remains in them at all. And possums love grass is what they like the most. They prefer grass. So when we're in the forests, if you were after a possum, you'd go to a clearing. That's where you'd put your traps or your cyanide, would be around a clearing, because that's where you're going to have the most possums. They love the grass. And then, of course, they do browse. They browse, but they also spread seed. So they play a big part in the seed rain process in a forest. So they're not all bad. You don't need to encourage children to beat them and kill them in a cruel way. And I think that's worrying when we get to a stage where everyone becomes so numb to the methods of animal control.
Well, there was something
that we can be so cruel.
Yes, there was something in the Herald about children. Well, a school that was having a possum killed as a fundraiser.
Mm.
And one of the children had to drown the joeys, which isn't allowed, of course, because it's cruel. But it's not as cruel as 1080, of course. But,
no.
But, I mean, we were fed this figure that there were about 90 million possums in New Zealand. Mm. But the last assessment was in 2008 and 9, and that was 47.6 million. And then when the possum control was taken into account, the number of possums was 30 million.
Yes.
Well, poisoning...
We highlighted it on Poisoning Paradise. We said on Poisoning Paradise that they've been dropping this poison for so many years and yet they're still claiming we've got 70 million possums. And so what happened, we travelled the country showing poisoning paradise, and it upset, you know, the agencies quite a lot. But they did another reassessment, and now they've come back with 30 million. But the funny thing about the aerial drops is if you need to, if it's warranted, if you like, if there's too many possums in a forest or too many rats, and that's the justification for doing an aerial drop, well, that in turn also means there will be far more toxic carcass baits lying around after the drop to poison non-target species. So it's a kind of a, you're in a tough place, you know. If the forest needs 1080 poison because there's too many possums, well, then you're really just creating a very toxic forest with poison carcasses, and they get into the waterways. That's without doubt. And so, you know, it's sort of like a catch 22. You can't win. It's toxic one way or the other. Either it doesn't need to be done at all, and they do it, or it just becomes a very contaminated place.
I was doing a bit of research before this interview, and I found a Landcare research document in 2009, and it states control of possums alone may not always have the net benefits for native biodiversity because, for example, of the increase in rodent numbers and hence predation on native animals that can occur when possum numbers are reduced. So if Landcare research are figuring this out, why is it not getting to the people that we need?
The government, our government, owns the factory that imports the poison. That factory, Aurelion, its mandate is to make a profit, to continue to use the poison and to try to increase its use. And so you've got a government with a conflict of interest, for starters, with regard to all this poisoning. Mm-hmm. And as you pointed out, it's well known that aerial poison drops can have the opposite effect because, as you said, you kill species within a forest and it opens a window for opportunity for food. So when you kill browsers and you kill animals in the forest, there's more food about. And, of course, then, like you said, the rats turn up and then the stoats increase, and the stoats, because there's an immediate kill after the aerial drop, stoats will switch to birds and instead of eating rats. So in a healthy ecosystem, like the one at the Mount Aspiring National Park, where they just poisoned for the first time in February, when we were filming down there, after the aerial drop, there wasn't a single dead rat. We didn't find a single dead rat. And the reason for that was because the ecosystem was managing itself. It was quite healthy. And the rat numbers were low, and the possum numbers were low as well. However, the Department of Conservation and Nick Smith made public statements saying, we've got plagues of rats in that forest and we're going to have to drop the poison. Well, when we undertook a look into the research that backed up those statements, we found that it was totally untrue. The rat data from the Department of Conservation showed the rats were practically at zero. And when they said that the possums had reached a threshold that they needed controlling, when we requested that research, it didn't exist. It was made up. And so when we went through the forest filming and investigating it, we wondered, why aren't there any rats? Why aren't there any possums? Very few possums. And then, of course, we realised that it's had nothing to do with rats or possums. They just wanted to drop that poison for whatever reason it was. And drop it they did, and they use rescue helicopters to do it as well. And so that clip's going to be on this new website, but it's also on the Graph Boys YouTube channel. It's worth a look.
Well, there's going to be a big drop in the on the west coast of the South Island coming up, and some companies just bought two more helicopters to be able to do that. So it's becoming an economic thing, isn't it?
It is. It's big business. It's big business, and it's achieving absolutely nothing. The poor old West Coast has been copping this stuff for years. There's probably not a possum left in the hills. There's very few deer. There's nearly no kea. Kea, of course, a native parrot or endemic parrot. But the kea also consumes not only the baits, but also the animal carcasses. So it's a carrion-eating parrot, one of few, very few in the world. The Kea populations have been plummeting since aerial poisoning has been undertaken, and even Doc's own poorly run radio tagging experiments still show Kea are dying in those aerial drops. So Kea will become extinct if they continue to do what they're doing, if they're not actually extinct already, if you know what I mean. They may have got to such low levels, they may not be able to recover.
Well, there were about 1,000 of them 10 years ago, but yes, if they keep... Yeah, that's pretty low as it is.
It's low, it's indisputable. What you'll find fascinating is the way it's portrayed. You have a look at some of the news reports on the dwindling Kea populations, and nowhere does it say aerial 1080 poisoning is at fault. You'll look at the list and it'll say roadkill, or eating lead nails, or tourists feeding the, you know, the parrots at the side of the road. Well, you feed the parrots food, are they likely to die of that? Probably not. Those parrots will eat a bicycle chair, a bicycle seat up in the hills if you leave it there. They just eat anything, they rip into anything. But they'll certainly eat cereal bait.
Yes.
And they do, and they hit in large numbers.
They ate a pair of my gloves once too.
Look, the other concerning thing about the birds is that there's over, there'd be over, I've got the lists somewhere, the official lists, but there's over something like 15 species of native birds that have been found dead with residues of poison. And that includes all of our parrots, our native parrots, the kakariki and the, well, apart from the kakapo, because it's never been exposed from what we are aware, but, you know, the kakariki, the kaka and the kea have all been found poisoned in aerial operations. And that's just, those are the parrots. And there's a whole bunch of others, species. Now, for them to say they're dropping the stuff all through a forest habitat and saying it's only getting the possums and rats, and yet these other species have all been found dead with poison in them, you know, you have to wonder whether they're going to be poisoned into the future and are still getting poisoned now, those same species, and they are. Kiwi are a funny one, because you take the Tongariro Forest Park, the Kiwi Sanctuary area, and I did an OIA a couple of years back asking how many Kiwi had died in there, and I think it was over a 5-year period, 89 Kiwi had died. And I asked them, well, okay, how many of those 89 were tested for poison residues? And the answer was none, not one of them. The Department of Conservation argued that the deaths were outside of a window that would be appropriate to warrant testing. But in any case, our argument is any Kiwi that dies in a forest where you're undertaking operations should be tested mandatory, in our opinion.
Yes.
Just tested, just to see, just in case. But none of them were. Same down at Mount Bruce Pukaha. They've put in around 110 Kiwi into that area over 15 years. It's been poisoned heavily and trapped, and it's got bait stations saturating the place. And there's only known to be about 7 wild Kiwi left as an estimate, and maybe 10 others out of 107. And in the last 3 years, it's been aerially poisoned, that block, the whole thing, including all the waterways in it, 940 hectares, three successive aerial drops over the last 3 years. And 14 more Kiwi have died since then. And only one Kiwi chick out of all those dead Kiwis was ever tested for 1080 residues. And yet all this poison is being used in the bait stations, Brodificum type poisons, other types, all sorts of cocktails. And so it's concerning to us that there's this over-willingness to not want to test these species. And that's part of the reason why they say we've never found a poisoned Kiwi yet, because so few have been tested.
I think that this is perhaps what we should really demand, is testing in the forests because that will be what will eventually prove the argument to the general public, to the government departments, whatever, is if we insist on testing when they have done a drop, that they go in and they find the species that are dead that are not target species and test them.
And I hate to say it, but I would be far more comfortable if they were tested offshore. I've got good reason for that, but as an example, have you heard on the news and the media, the agency saying, oh my gracious, we rarely find any 1080 detected in water. It's rare to find a positive water test. That's something that you'll hear stated over and over again in the media. When you drill down into that statement and you consider it and investigate it, and then you notice, hang on a second, these guys are doing the water testing 24 to 48 hours after the aerial drop. And then when you go to Landcare Research, their website, it states, if you want to detect 1080 poison in water, the most appropriate time to do it is within 8 hours of an aerial drop. And the reason is, when the aerial drop goes down, aquatic life start consuming the poison. They take up the bait, like freshwater crayfish. They consume it like it's lollies. They also form part of the diet of birds and eels and trout and other things. But in any case, so the poison, it's not uptaken by the plants, not uptaken by the aquatic life, then passes through the water channel and gets diluted further down into a lake somewhere. But what these guys are doing is they're coming in at 24 and 48 hours after an aerial drop, taking their water samples and possibly not even taking them in a manner that's actually acceptable in regard to temperature-wise and keeping them cool, and then sending them off and getting them tested. And when they're coming back negative, if you like, they claim there was no 1080 in the water, which is totally untrue. It's in the water, it's been diluted further downstream, it's been uptaken by wildlife. So these are the sorts of methods these pro-poisoning agencies use to mislead the public. I'd like to see the testing done in parts per trillion. We would like to see the tests done within 8 hours of the drops. But even the medical officer of health, the health boards, they say they don't even demand that either, because they say we only suggest testing after 24 hours because that's when you can turn your water on again, after 24 hours when the poison's no longer detectable. So that's why they test then. They're looking for it to be absent, not looking for its presence. Now that's fine, but you get the Department of Conservation and TB Free and Osprey pooling those results and claiming that they don't detect 1080 when they're being dishonest. They should say the reason we're not detecting is because it's already been uptaken and passed through the water column or whatever it is. But, you know, we're just getting misled over a lot of things in this poisoning business.
Yes, I believe there's some tests that have sort of gone missing. I found some information about bradyficum and how it kills the worms. Scientific information, and that was on the internet, and it seems to have disappeared now.
Sometimes the links seem to fail. What I do now, if you ever do, and I recommend this for anyone, if you ever do find a study that you think is quite interesting, download it.
Yes.
And then save it on your computer, and then you can re-reference it, which is what I've done on this new website that I'm working on at the moment. I've got documents, that way the links can't be intercepted or the links can't be blocked or cut off, you know. And that's another concern when important information becomes less available.
Well, now, a few minutes ago you mentioned TB, because, of course, the TB in the cattle is one of the reasons that people are wanting 1080 use, isn't it? It's not just conserving, so-called conserving the forests and the birds.
Well, TB in New Zealand is primarily caused by or transmitted by transportation, farm to farm, poor tagging systems, Now, over the last 10 years, that's all been improved with the NATE system, which is tagging, better processes in place. But it's still the possum that's blamed. But in reality, I did an OIA 5 years ago on TB Free, and I said to them, can you tell me, please, how many possums have been identified in the North Island with TB, bovine TB, in the last 5 years? And I got the results back, and it wasn't 100 or 1,000. It was only one case on the Western Bays of Taupo. And so Richard Prosser from New Zealand First has dug it a little bit deeper and asked for the information. And it's something like about, it's only ever been about 50-odd possums found with TB in the history of this country, positive tested. And yet there's been tens of hundreds of thousands of them autopsied. Every year there's about 10,000 autopsies undertaken by TB Free. And when I was in regional council here at the Waikato in the last term, we used to get the annual reports. And for the 3 years I was there, there was never a possum found with TB in it. And so what has happened is TB Free have injected TB into possums and released a bunch of them down near Wellington. Now, that was a bit of an outrage. People were saying, what the hell are you doing, releasing it into... Oh, they were doing some experiments they wanted to see. In Australia, they've got the brush-tailed possum. They had TB. They never blamed the possums for the TB. The possums never got the TB. They never spread it. Never existed. And the pathway between possum and cattle is still unproven in this country to this day, scientifically. Yes, it has happened on rare occasions that a possum has had bovine TB, but it's extremely rare. There's never been an outbreak, ever, of any possums with TB. And so the possum is being used once again as a scapegoat for an industry, a big industry. And it's a shame because people believe it and they want to believe it. It's far better to blame the possum, isn't it?
Yeah.
And, you know, getting to the root of the problem. But in saying that, New Zealand is classed as TB-free anyway in the world. We're below a certain threshold, which makes us TB-free to the world.
Right.
And so, but it doesn't stop the TB-free industry from continuing to clock on and consume about $100 million a year as a charity.
Gosh. Yes. So there's really corruption in the system. And I'm just going to clarify something. I think three times you've mentioned OIA. So for those that don't know what an OIA is, it's an Official Information Act make a request for information. So,
and it's a very important and powerful thing, really. For example, the Department of Conservation is generally very good at providing information. I've always found them good to deal with, and they've always been very quick with information when I've asked for it through the OIA process. Now, if anyone listening would like to use the OIA process, which you are entitled to do, you don't have to be afraid, you don't have to be a lawyer. All you do is send an email to oia@govt.nz. And that will go straight to the OIA department of Department of Conservation. Hang on, it might be oia@doc.govt.nz. That's important, but I'm going to check because this is important. The reason it's important is because people out there, listeners, can do this whenever there's an aerial drop undertaken in their area. It's oia@doc.govt.nz.
Right.
Okay, and so I now get the toxin flight charts after certain aerial drops, the ones that we're filming, just to prove that the baits are going into the water, because the charts show the lines, the toxic lines, where the bait's dropped and where it isn't. And so people can do that. You just have to send an email, dear doc, could you please, under the OIA, provide me with this. And it might be a research paper, or it could be anything. And I use the OIA for Kiwi numbers information on Tongariro, all sorts of things. So it's a very good way for the public to have a little bit of transparency, if you like, or a little bit of ability to get information.
So on Saturday night I went to hear Jane Goodall speak about conservation and what she'd done in Africa and things like that, and the questions were sort of preempted. Catherine Ryan from Radio New Zealand just sort of asked her very quickly and said that there's a lot of people who are not happy about the poisoning that's going on in New Zealand. And Jane Goodall's reply was that she didn't think it was appropriate to kill animals with this sort of agony. So, with this sort of pain, that it's the wrong thing to do for animals. And I noticed that SAFE have on their website a page on 1080 and its cruelty, but the SPCA does not, as far as I've seen.
We have undertaken a couple of presentations to the SPCA at their annual conferences, and they've up to a couple of years ago, they were quite good at opposing the poison. They never came out too strongly, but when they did, I remember there was a case where they did come out pretty strongly. It may have been over poison deer, one of the films we managed to film down at the one of the poison drops. I think it may have been something like that, and they came out quite strongly with a statement and the use of 1080, but they were hammered quite hard. It might have been by Nick Smith or I can't remember who it was. One of the politicians, I think, came down and suggested that people should not support the SPCA for opposing the most needed pest control tool, and so they got fairly well hammered. And since then, the SPCA seems to have gone a bit more quiet on it. It's a shame, but perhaps they rely on funding from government. I don't know.
They probably do.
So there's, people have their reasons, organisations have their reasons. It is very risky to oppose the use of 1080 poison in this country. There's a lot of industries attached to it. It goes right through universities, if you like. It's right through, educational institutions, scientific institutions. Speak out against it and you can be blacklisted or you can be condemned. My brother and I, have been doing this for 10 years and we feel that we are in that boat. We find it very difficult to get any progress on any of our filming and outdoor stuff. My brother's just finished a magnificent documentary called Wild Without Wings. It has just won an award over in Hollywood somewhere, but the New Zealand Film Festival here wouldn't even accept it. And yet it's the best Kiwi footage, the best other footage that's ever been taken on the subjects that he did in the country, and this country would love to see it. And it's better than anything Attenborough's done. It's better than anything the Big Blue Backyard's done. It's better than any of those, believe it or not, with their huge budgets. Because he's such a good wildlife photographer, filmer, he's put this doco together over 2 years or 3 years. And it's won over there. And in Auckland, they turned it down and said, oh, maybe next year. And there was reasons behind it. But it just, we hit our heads against the wall. The way the corruption works and the way the country works with all their buddies, they're so small, this country, you better watch out, you see. And I think that's why SPCA possibly backed off, I don't know. But it's risky. The reason we keep fighting this is because we believe what we're doing is vital. It has to be done. We have to get up there with film. We have to show the world what's going on, because these poisoners are going to destroy our natural heritage, our natural wilderness areas, and it's happening now. And people's rights, they live on the rural edge of a forest and they're drawing water and they're not even told there's when the poison's going in the water, and there can be carcasses in that water later, and they're not aware of that either. Same with the trampers tramping our forests after aerial drops, drinking water because it's so pure. Well, is it? Is it pure?
Yes.
So, well,
yes, so
on that note, I better let everyone get back to bed.
It's been very good to talk to you, Clyde. Thank you very much. And so this was Clyde Graff, one of the Graff brothers. Graff boys, sorry.
Correct.
One of the Graff boys. And he used to be a councillor at Waikato?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And so now what are you doing apart from...
Well, I was elected as a councillor in 2013 for Waikato Regional Council in the Thames Coromandel area. And that was an eye-opener. And so this website that is going to be released any day also includes information that was assembled over that period of time, which some of it I believe is quite revealing or disturbing in some ways. I was the elected chair of the Environmental Performance Committee during that period, and it was a real eye-opener into the bureaucracy and the way things work at council level, with the way staff, if you like, some staff control the whole picture, and so that was quite interesting. Unfortunately, when I went to get re-elected, it didn't happen. I lost by about 200 votes. A lot of money was spent against me, and that's a fact. A lot of money was spent to try to tip me out, and it sort of worked. So I'm now in the doldrums, continuing to stir things up, I suppose.
We need stirrers.
Well, this website's a bit of a stirrer. It's no good doing the same thing over and over again and expecting the different results. So
yes,
this one's taking a slightly different angle.
So this is, I'll just say the web address again is www.watersourcenz.org.
Yes, and it's not live yet.
No.
But by the time you hear this, it'll be close.
Okay.
All right, so it's over. It should be live. It's just trying to tidy things up and get things, all the T's crossed and the I's dotted. And so in the next few days anyway, it'll be worth a look for a lot of people, I think.
Well, look, Clyde, thank you very much for coming, and thank you for all your work. And I'm sure that you will be vindicated in the end, because we just have to work with nature, not against it.
But great, and thank you for your time and earring.
Oh, that's great. Thanks, Clyde. That was Lisa Eyre interviewing Clyde Graff on the 1080 poisoning of New Zealand, our paradise. The interview was sponsored by The Awareness Party, theawarenessparty.com. And you've just been listening to Green Planet on Planet FM. Join us at the same time next week, 8 a.m. Thursdays, or anytime online at greenplanetfm.com.